Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Republican Dan Proft, Democrat Eric Edelstein, Georgia Leothogas of the Daily Kos, Rick Albin, political reporter for WOOD in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Dave Woodard, political science professor at Clemson University in Clemson, South Carolina. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base on State Street, that great street in Chicago. Lots of ground to cover. 1-800-723-8289 is the phone number. btbtalk@aol.com is the email address if you'd like to drop us a line. Georgia Logothetis, thanks very much for being with us. Nice
Thank
to have you with us. A lot of action to talk about.
First, I want to
get your reaction to the conventional analysis coming out of New Hampshire, that it was Hillary's emotional moment that turned the tide. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think the pollsters are still kind of sorting through the aftermath of New Hampshire because, you know, they were all a little bit stunned when there was that big turnaround going in. I think the average was Obama by, you know, 5 or 8 points, and she ended up winning by the margin that she won. People have been explaining it in various ways. One was that perhaps one thing to understand is that the exit polls were correct in terms of Obama's figures. Just Hillary's were underestimated. And I do think that, you know, in the last 3 or 4 days before New Hampshire, it was Hillary Clinton who controlled the news cycle. We had, you know, her very touching moment in the debate where she said that, you know, Tim Russert's question hurt her feelings. Then there were...
It was the local reporter.
Yes, that was the one. And then we had the protesters. It actually ended up being a radio stunt that held up signs at one of her town hall meetings that said, "Iron my shirt," and that was one news cycle. And then obviously we had, you know, where she teared up, talking about how tough the campaign has been for her. And I think that that might have had a role, you know, coupled with her aggressive get-out-the-vote strategy for older females. I think that that obviously was a factor in
Dan
her margin
Proft,
victory.
Last week, our card-carrying conservative joins us. Last week, you picked Hillary Clinton to win the primary and John McCain. So congratulations
you.
On your
prognostication. I uncontrollably lurched into an insight.
Yes.
I get a gold BTB gold star.
Yes, you do.
That's right.
How much of the loss could be pegged on smugness on the part of Barack Obama?
You know, I think there might be some of that. I know that New Hampshire primary voters pride themselves on their independence. They don't like to be told what's going to happen by pundits. They don't like somebody coming in to a coronation, which is kind of what it appeared coming out of Iowa. Obama was coming into New Hampshire with. But and I think Clinton substantially outperformed him in that debate over the weekend as well, going into that primary, and did a nice job recasting the whole change thing and kind of bringing it out of the ether and down into the real world of, okay, change is good, I'm for change, but there's an experience you have to have, there's ideas you have to put forward to build coalitions around and so forth, and by the way, having the first woman president would be change as well. I think those were things that may have resonated with Democrats primary voters as much as Obama's smugness.
Eric Edelstein also joins us, our Democrat. Your assessment of the debate, and was it the turning point?
I don't think there's one factor. I think there were a whole lot of things that happened. And I've been saying for a long time in kind of watching these heavyweights go at it that you know, people on either side would be depressed or they'd be up based on where the polls were, and it would be over or it wouldn't be over. And I kept saying that a funny thing happens when the voters get involved in these things. And it happened in Iowa.
So independent.
It happened in Iowa, and it happened in New Hampshire. And I think there's another unique point, which is that polling is a predictive science that's based on building models of past behavior. We're in a new place, okay? An African-American and a female as the leading contenders for the Democratic nomination for president. We don't have a map. We don't have historicals on how voters, when they go into a caucus or they go into the voting booth, despite what they may tell a pollster, how will they behave? And I think this is going to be a fascinating experiment. I hope ultimately a positive one. But we don't know in many ways how voters are going to behave.
I was at the debate last Saturday, the ABC debate, watching it, you know, from the press area, and it struck me, as it always does, whenever I move from my little table here in Chicago and wade inside the Beltway with some of the other national media reporters, the reality is that they are divorced from, I think, a reality. When that debate was over, I mean, I was with a couple of people, and we basically said we thought that Hillary did very well. I personally was moved by the moment when she said, that hurt my feelings. I mean, that got to me, and I'm, you know, I'm not a huge Hillary fan, but that got to me. But when it was all over, in listening in on all of the other national media people that were around, they all said, oh, Hillary was killed in this debate. They all, to a person, they all thought she did not do well, and they all said that it was going to be a cakewalk for Barack Obama. Nobody saw the emotion. Nobody saw the shift. I thought the other strength of her in that debate was when she was getting picked on by, I think, Obama, and certainly by Edwards, she got her back up, and chapter and verse, I thought she laid Obama out.
Yeah.
And nobody else saw that.
Well, the press is always, the press seems to be a little bit behind the storyline. And also, I think what's happening, what has been happening, you know, Hillary's even complaining about the, I guess it's the vast left-wing conspiracy now, the press coverage of Obama, where it's not press coverage, it's like Dear Diary entries in terms of how they cover Obama, that they're almost as excited as his, you know, as his supporters, and that he hasn't gotten the kind of review that she has gotten or that he deserves to get, given his lack of a lot of detail on what hope and change would look like under President Obama.
But across the spectrum, I think it's not just the coverage of Obama, but generally speaking, the traditional media's coverage of this campaign has been just abominable. I mean, it's 24/7, it's saturated, it's nonstop, but that doesn't make it, you know, it's a quality versus quantity issue. And usually the topics, if you notice, it's very much the horse race. It's very much the poll numbers, but not talking about the issues that are underlying the poll numbers. So when, you know, Obama may jump, you know, 4 or 5 points in a given poll, they don't talk about the reasons behind that. Are voters interested in his positions on health care? What are his positions on health care? I was talking with somebody else. I had read an article where there was a young voter who said she couldn't decide between John McCain or Barack Obama. And that was a little bit flabbergasted.
I ran into several people like that in New Hampshire.
And it's amazing how, you know, even though they're saying that this primary season has already given us more election coverage than any other presidential election, how uninformed the voters truly are. And going into the voting booth, you know, do they know the actual positions of these candidates? And the answer is no.
I completely disagree. And it's because of the good things that Daily Kos and other people like your organization have done to democratize the media. Here's what I think is a wonderful thing. You know, we have these stories of Hillary's moment and people going into their offices the next day and being gathered around computers. We have all these sources of rich media and writing and analysis. People aren't dependent only on the three major networks or their daily newspaper in the morning. So when the national media can go out and a couple months ago criticize Senator Obama for his comments on Pakistan, and there was this herd mentality that he created this incredibly...
How stupid he was.
Mm-hmm. People could go make their own judgment. They could go watch the clip. They could read Daily Kos and other sources of information. So I think they're much more informed. I think the problem we run into in the herd mentality is because you guys have made it so fast, everybody has to render an opinion and a result so quickly, and then there's this herd mentality.
I want to talk about somebody who dominated the news that day in New Hampshire, and he's still doing it. It's Bill Clinton. We're going to talk about what he said in just a moment.
Outside the soon-to-be-completed Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Psst. Hey, you.
Who, me?
Yeah. What are you looking at?
I'm looking at a beautiful new building.
Get it right. You're looking at me. I'm the beautiful new Museum of Broadcast Communications.
A talking building?
No, a talking horse.
Hello.
Yes, I'm a talking building. I communicate. And I need some money.
I don't know if I have any spare change on me.
I get it. Here, look inside this door.
Here's Johnny.
Wow.
You think that's something? Look at this.
Bozo's Circus is on the air.
Boy, that's something.
You see, weren't those shows important to you?
Sure.
Well, if you donate just a couple of shekels, I could open my doors to show you the entire history of broadcasting.
Everything?
I'm brand spanking new kid, but I'm a few bricks shy of a full house, so I need you to donate. I need your help.
You need help? I'm talking to a building.
The brand new Museum of Broadcast Communications needs your help. Go to museum.tv and help bring the history of broadcasting to life.
From Myrtle Beach, South Carolina to Wilmington, North Carolina, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us. We were talking in the last segment about sort of the way in which Hillary Clinton sort of dominated the news leading into the vote last week in New Hampshire. On primary day, the early stories were about Barack Obama, who had played to huge crowds the day before and also played to a large crowd that morning at Dartmouth College in Hanover, New Hampshire. But before he spoke, Bill Clinton had gone to Dartmouth College, and he had given a talk. And his conversation, and he showed he was somewhat irate about the media coverage of Barack Obama, but he was specifically talking about what he believed to be the way in which Obama was basically getting away with murder on the subject of his past voting record on Iraq. That came up today, that comment by Bill Clinton, and the reaction to it has created the new brouhaha in this campaign. It now has racial overtones to it. We'll talk about it when we come back. It was also the focal point of an extended conversation today on Meet the Press. Hillary Clinton was the guest. Tim Russert was doing his usual great job of interrogation. And it began with a clip from last week by Bill Clinton at Dartmouth College in Hanover, New Hampshire.
Give me a break. This whole thing is the biggest fairy tale I've ever seen.
Congressman James Clyburn of South Carolina, who's neutral, said this: to call that dream a fairy tale, which Bill Clinton seemed to be doing, could very well be insulting to some of us.
But Tim, let me just stop you right there. No,
You did not give the entire quote.
The entire quote was clearly about the position on Iraq. It was not about the entire candidacy. It was not about the extraordinary abilities.
Covering this race. Donna Brazile, herself, a longtime activist in the Democratic Party, this is what she said. Here's Donna Brazile.
As an African American, I find his words and his tone to be very depressing.
So these are people who are not supporters of Obama who are listening. Now, let me just go to the Martin Luther King thing, because you had your opportunity to talk about this at the beginning of the show, and I just want to lay this out for our viewers. This is how the New York Times categorized it. In an interview with Fox News on Monday, Mrs. Clinton tried to make a point about presidential leadership. Dr. King's dream began to be realized when President Johnson passed the Civil Rights Act of 64. Mrs. Clinton said in trying to make the case that her experience should mean more to voters than the uplifting words of Mr. Obama, it took a president to get it done. Again, Congressman Clyburn, we have to be very, very careful about how we speak about that era in American politics. That bothered me a great deal. A writer in the Washington Post today, a black woman, said, it's as if you are minimizing I Have a Dream, that you are saying it's a nice sentiment, but it took a white president to get blacks to the mountaintop.
Well, you know, I understand the taking out of context and the mischaracterization. I have spoken with Congressman Clyburn. I have spoken with a number of my very strong and adamant supporters. But, Tim, I can't let you get away with that mischaracterization and those snippets. I was responding to a speech that Senator Obama gave in New Hampshire, where he did compare himself to President Kennedy and to Dr. King. You know, President Kennedy served in the Congress for 14 years. He was a war hero. He'd been engaged in many of the battles that led to his election in the 1960 election. Dr. King had been on the front lines. He had been leading a movement. But Dr. King understood, which is why he made it very clear that there had to be a coming to terms of our country politically in order to make the changes that would last for generations beyond the iconic, extraordinary speeches that he gave. That's why he campaigned for Lyndon Johnson in 1964. That's why he was there when those great pieces of legislation were passed. Does he deserve the lion's share of the credit for moving our country and moving our political process? Yes, he does. But he also had partners who were in the political system. And I think it is such an unfair and unwarranted attempt to, you know, misinterpret and mischaracterize what I've said. Look at what I've done my entire life. I have been working on behalf of civil rights, women's rights, human rights for years. And I know how challenging it is to change our political system. And I have the highest regard for those who have put themselves on the line. You know, Congressman Clyburn was part of that movement. So many of the people whom I admire in my country who have given of themselves to make these changes went into politics in order to realize the changes, worked to elect people in order to make the changes. You know, this is, you know, an unfortunate storyline that the Obama campaign has pushed very successfully. They've been putting out talking points. They've been making this. They've been telling people in a very selective way what the facts are. And I'm glad to have the opportunity to set the facts straight.
In Newsweek,
that was Meet the Press today. Eric, in this view, you saw that, and you know this, the controversy, the way it's going. Is this going to go down a very murky trail? Is it already gone down a murky trail early in this campaign?
Well, I hope it doesn't. I mean, I think the way Senator Clinton did it in New Hampshire was clunky and awkward, and I think she very quickly at her next stop tried to correct herself. I think it's going to be a big mistake if partisans on both sides try to stoke up race or stoke up gender, and we've seen examples of it. Georgia mentioned it, the ironing the shirts comments, the, oh, she was just having tea with foreign leaders, this kind of benign stuff, the Andrew Cuomo saying you can't shuck and jive your way to New Hampshire. I think hopefully in this process we're going to purge ourselves of some of this stuff and it's going to come out.
Is it a storyline that's being pushed by Obama?
I don't know.
She alleges.
I have no idea.
Georgia, what do you think?
I mean, when you deal with campaigns, it's always, you know, a surrogate does this or a campaign. If as long as you donate $1 to a campaign, if you do something that the other campaign doesn't like, they automatically attribute your actions to a given campaign. On a broader note, though, I think something that isn't being discussed about her Martin Luther King comments is that, yes, I mean, I understand the point she was trying to make, which is that you do have a movement, but then you do need the political system to enact long-term change. But that's why Barack Obama's running for president, so that he can be in a position to enact the change. And I think that, you know, that's something that's not really being discussed. Everyone's focusing on the racial part of it.
But let me just say, and I think it was clunky the way they did it. The storyline the Clinton campaign was trying to get out, in my mind, and Dan, I'd be curious your opinion, was he gives a great speech,
yeah,
what kind of president will he be? It had nothing to do with race.
Yeah.
So they were
exactly
trying to make the point, I'm the one who can be president. He gives great speeches.
That's
exactly. As did Dr. King.
Correct. Well,
they both give mm-hmm. great speeches.
Right.
But you've got to go beyond
the
speech.
Right. Yeah, I think that's exactly the point that the Clinton camp was trying to make, and it got drawn into this racial component, not surprisingly, especially with South Carolina in the offing. But I think they were exactly making the point that he's being built up as, you know, JFK for this generation, and guess what? He's not. JFK served for 14 years in the Congress. You know, he did these things. He didn't just give a few good lines and a good speech. He didn't just look good on TV. He had a record of accomplishment. I'm the one with the record of accomplishment.
But is the fairy tale? I mean, you know, did you buy Bill Clinton when he was irate?
Did I buy that as authentic?
When yeah. I first saw it on TV, oh, yeah. I said, boy, he really
had that wagging of the finger
really,
going yes, on again.
He's really ticked off. See, on this.
I bought him.
It was fairy tale deliberately picked.
You know, I don't know, but that's a good question. I think that Hillary at that coffee shop in New Hampshire when she got choked up, and I think Bill at Dartmouth when he got upset, I think that was authentic, but it was coming from a place of this is slipping away, and I'm upset
we're
about
losing it.
Yeah, but for both of them.
I just think it is fair to say, I know it's been said a lot of places, not here tonight, is that the strength and sort of the promise of Senator Obama is that he has transcended race in
right.
so many ways and has had this cross-cultural appeal, and that to his credit, his entire career, including up till now, has not in any way attempted to invoke those things. And I think people have to be very careful before they start saying his campaign or he is doing this. I don't know whether they are or they aren't.
Does it raise the possibility, however, of those who are looking at this and say, wait a minute, this was very innocuous, and here you have black leadership now reacting, some would say overreacting,
yeah.
mm-hmm.
to something that was said by Bill Clinton, and they're now trying to suggest that the Clintons somehow are racist or playing a race card.
Yeah, and I think that I can't remember who said it, but the idea of getting into the weeds on this and debating, you know, how much of a civil rights leader Lyndon Johnson actually was. I mean, this was not a guy who necessarily was coming from a place of great principle when he signed the 64 Civil Rights Act.
Here's what I think is the question. And you know, I asked this question when I saw her and give her a speech in Selma, Alabama, you know, a little over a year ago. I mean, she talks about, you know, she met Dr. King when she was 14 years old, and the role, how Martin Luther King, you know, campaigned for Lyndon Johnson in 1964. Hillary Clinton was a Goldwater girl.
Mm-hmm.
She
That's
wasn't
right.
for Martin Luther King in 1964. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. She was for Barry Goldwater. He was fighting the Civil Rights Bill.
Mm-hmm.
So how does she become indignant about something that happened in 1964 when she's quoting Martin Luther King? It makes no sense to me.
I think Obama had a very good response to Hillary Clinton's Meet the Press performance, where he stated that, you know, for somebody that keeps talking about history, she sure likes to rewrite it. And I think that that's what we see going on a lot in her campaign, where, you know, and I would say to a certain extent in all the campaigns that we've seen this cycle, where, you know, it's the traditional political, you know, concept of take whatever little factoid you can and frame it in whatever reality best suits your campaign.
Well, also we're going to find out whether that's a double-edged sword, because it may be increasing black turnout in South Carolina, which is the next challenge for the Democrats. But again, maybe it's increasing white turnout in certain areas, or people that were frankly offended by the way that this thing is playing out and the racial overtones that some have injected into this campaign. 1-800-723-8029. When we come back, we're going to go to South Carolina, take the political pulse down there with one of the state's leading political operatives.
Mmm, this is nice.
Go ahead, take a deep breath.
Mmm.
Yeah, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Of course you do. Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system, your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department. We're talking high performance.
Wow, I'll take it.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. We continue with Beyond the Beltway. Our Democrat tonight is Eric Edelstein, one of the country's leading Democratic political media advisors. Also this evening, joining us is our card-carrying conservative Republican, Dan Proft. He is a commentator for WLS Radio with Don Wade and Roma in the morning on our flagship station. And Georgia Logothites also joins us. She is one of the country's leading bloggers, and she is with The Daily Kos. We thank you all for joining us. We're now going to head to South Carolina, where David Woodard joins us. He is a professor of political science at Clemson University. Professor, thanks very much for joining us on Beyond the Beltway.
Good to be with you, Bruce. Thanks.
I'd like to begin, first of all, with kind of an update on the Rasmussen poll in South Carolina for the Democrats. Has Barack Obama leading at with 42%, Hillary Clinton with 30%, John Edwards with 15%. And I want to, before we start talking about the Republicans, which is your primary area of expertise, I want to get your reaction to the way in which this controversy involving Bill Clinton and Representative James Clyburn of South Carolina, the racial component to this Barack Obama-Hillary Clinton spat, how is it playing in South Carolina at the moment?
Well, it's playing pretty prominently. That's the short answer, and I think it's really hurting Hillary Clinton down here. Barack Obama was probably going to win here, just given the makeup of the electorate and the fact that he came out of Iowa so powerfully, but this issue has certainly hurt Hillary Clinton's chances here, and she spent a lot of time down here, has a lot of endorsements, and they seem to be going out the window this week.
And what was the turning point? Was it the interpretation of a Representative Clyburn, who seems to be upset about what was said? And is he likely now to endorse her because he's playing a neutral role thus far?
Well, I doubt if he will endorse Barack Obama. I think he probably wanted to endorse Barack Obama, and Hillary Clinton gave him a good reason to. But be that as it may, Jim Clyburn is a very widely respected Democrat down here. one of the few that can seem to win election and command a national presence. And I think he will be very influential in whenever, if and when he endorses Barack Obama.
And one of the significant differences between Iowa, where Barack Obama won, and New Hampshire, where Hillary Clinton won, one of the big shifts was that she did well with women in New Hampshire. How important is the female vote in South Carolina, and how important is the black female vote there?
Black female vote is about 30% of the electorate in South Carolina. There is not a large professional single female class in South Carolina. So it's primarily half the electorate on Election Day will be African American. And you can just feel as you drive around this state, as you look at the signs, as you read the newspapers, the excitement that's here for Barack Obama. It's clear that the air is going out of Hillary Clinton's balloon.
Now, one of the comments that's been made by some operatives supporting Barack Obama is that if he were to end up as the Democratic nominee, he might be able to put in play some southern states because there would be black pride, there would be a huge turnout, and it would flip some of these Republican states. Do you think that the level of excitement for Barack Obama, as you determine it right now, is it likely to maybe put South Carolina into a competitive state in the fall?
I doubt it. Bush and the Republicans carried this state by 16 points in 2004. I don't think any amount of excitement can overcome the fact that there's just a it's just a conservative state and not going to overcome that.
Now, speaking of conservative states, let's talk about the Republican primary. We should mention, by the way, that the Republican primary, which is coming up next Saturday, the Democrats have split themselves off. They're a couple of weeks away. They're going to go to Nevada first.
Yeah.
But in the Republican primary, John McCain has slipped into first place, according to the Rasmussen poll, at 27%. Mike Huckabee with 24%. Romney was 16%, and Fred Thompson, fighting for his life, is down there at 12%. What is your sense of the momentum in that state at the moment in the Republican primary?
It's quite different from those numbers. We're polling here at Clemson University. We'll be polling on Monday and Tuesday night. I sit in the call center. I sense quite a different dynamic going on, but our polling is confirming two things. Only about half the people seem to have made up their mind, and even those that have made up the mind, 40% of them say they might change their mind between now and Election Day. So it's still very fluid down here.
What's the issue that's moving people based on your preliminary discussions, David?
Well, the number one issue is probably the economy followed by immigration. And we're seeing quite a bit of attack ads, and we're seeing a lot of visibility by some of the candidates. The person that's sort of surprising me is Thompson. He's up here very powerfully on television. He has a good television ad here. And even though I thought he was out of it, you have to remember that Romney has pretty much abandoned the state. Now, his ads are here, but he's not. And so the visibility is primarily with Huckabee, McCain, and Thompson. Those are the three major players. And we will just have to see. We still have a week to go. That doesn't sound like much, but in a week, a lot of things can change when half the people haven't made up their mind.
In the New Hampshire primary debate, there was a lot of discussion between Romney and McCain on the issue of illegal immigration, and all of the spots that were basically running in the state by Romney were really attacking John McCain on his illegal immigration issue. If that indeed is the one of the hot issues down there, to what extent does McCain's position on illegal immigration and his support of a plan that was dismissed by the American people, how much of that is an albatross around his neck?
It is an albatross around his neck, especially on talk radio, and it's well remembered, as well as the stance by the senior senator, Lindsey Graham. It was called Grahamnesty down here. And there's quite a bit of criticism of him, and John McCain still brings in a lot of bad blood from 2000. You have to remember that, too. In fact, in our polls, we've asked people in both parties, about their favorable, unfavorability ratings, and the highest unfavorables in both parties go to John McCain. So it's by no means is he rolling down here with the kind of momentum that I'm seeing in the national press.
Dan Proft is our card-carrying conservative Republican. He's got a comment for you.
Yeah, a question, really. The McCain thing, you're kind of led right into my question, is given that, given some of McCain's unpopular positions, particularly among conservatives, given Huckabee's rise among Christian conservatives, how do you explain McCain having kind of the sizable chunk of the electorate he seems to have, at least according to polling? What is it that's driving it? Is it just his resurgence and his belief maybe among some primary voters that he would be the best nominee to face either Clinton or Obama?
What I think is really driving him is Obama's rise and his problem with inexperience. Republicans are sort of gravitating McCain because they see him as experienced. However, I don't want to make too much of that because I think McCain still has serious problems in this state. And I see a lot of energy in the Huckabee and Thompson camps, especially since the debate last Thursday night. You know, they really went after each other here. And I think some of that fire has sort of energized some of the Thompson supporters here.
And where do you think, you know, now that Romney is kind of regressing to the mean, where do you see his voters possibly going if he's not going to be competitive?
Well, I think they're going to be fought over by Huckabee and Thompson. I think McCain pretty much has his defense conservative base. It's the social conservatives, the value conservatives, the social issue conservatives. That's where about 40-odd percent of the electorate is, and they're trying to figure out who they're going to vote for, either Huckabee or Thompson.
Given the strong evangelical support that exists in the state, is there something other than his evangelical upbringing? Is there something that's keeping Huckabee in the mix down there?
Yeah, on every two statistics are important. Excuse me, guys, I've got a cold.
All right.
One of the things that you find out when you poll primary voters is you ask them this question, how often do you go to church? 70% of them say they go about once a week. Half the churchgoers on Sunday are in the Southern Baptist Church. So you see that Huckabee has a built-in constituency down here in the Southern Baptist Church and in the Republican Party. Now, they haven't played that, but Huckabee stands real strong among those people. Just by showing up, he's strong.
You mentioned that Lindsey Graham, a longtime supporter and friend of John McCain's, he was his campaign manager 8 years ago down in South Carolina. Where are the other political leaders in the state? Where are they lining up for the primary?
Well, the governor hasn't picked anybody, Mark Sanford. The junior senator, Jim DeMint, has been with Romney. And I think that is not going to play very strongly here. Popular conservative Congressman Gresham Barrett has endorsed Thompson. McCain has his supporters as well. They're not quite as visible as these statewide elected officers.
Once upon a time, at least about 7 or 8 months ago, Rudy Giuliani was running fairly well down there. Got an endorsement of Reverend Pat Robertson. What's happening to the Giuliani campaign at all down there?
Well, he's just not here. He's not here. His ads aren't. Well, there are some ads up. I should say that. There are some ads up of Rudy Giuliani. But just the feeling is that Rudy's had a bad 6 months, going back to the Politico.com scandal and other things. He's having a hard time.
David Woodard is joining us. He is a professor of political science at Clemson University, one of the most beautiful universities in the United States. 1-800-723-8289 is the phone number. We're going to keep the phone lines open, get more questions from our guests in Chicago and from you listening coast to coast when we continue inside South Carolina politics when Beyond the Beltway rolls on from Chicago.
Outside the soon-to-be-completed Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Psst. Hey, you.
Who, me?
Yeah. What are you looking at?
I'm looking at a beautiful new building.
Get it right. You're looking at me. I'm the beautiful new Museum of Broadcast Communications.
A talking building?
No, a talking horse.
Hello.
Yes, I'm a talking building. I communicate, and I need some money.
I don't know if I have any spare change on me.
I get it. Here, look inside this door.
Here's Johnny.
Wow.
You think that's something? Look at this.
Bozo's Circus is on the air.
Boy, that's something.
You see, weren't those shows important to you?
Sure.
Well, if you donate just a couple of shekels, I could open my doors to show you the entire history of broadcasting.
Everything?
I'm brand spanking new, kid, but I'm a few bricks shy of a full house, so I need you to donate. I need your help.
You need help? I'm talking to a building.
The brand new Museum of Broadcast Communications needs your help. Go to museum.tv and help bring the history of broadcasting to life.
From Charleston, South Carolina to Las Vegas, Nevada, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. David Woodard joins us. He is a professor of political science at Clemson University, joins us from Clemson, South Carolina. And Gloria Logothetis of the Daily Kos, you smile when he was talking about the Huckabee bump, because you think Huckabee would be the easiest Republican to beat, right?
Well, I think almost all the Republicans would be easy to beat. A new CNN poll actually out this week had each one of our candidates handedly beating all of the Republican candidates. But I think that the Huckabee situation presents a very unique situation for the Republican Party. And I touched on this last week, where I said there's this kind of bubbling civil war in the Republican Party between the evangelical base and the Wall Street Republican or more traditional mainstream Republicans. And what we're seeing, actually, if you notice, Huckabee, for example, today there was an article where he gave a speech and he said, well, the evangelical base always turns out for Republicans, and now we get to nominate one of our own. And that's great for evangelical conservatives in their eyes, but it really scares the traditional Republicans, the non-Christian conservatives, the non-social values voters. Because all this time they've been, you know, reaping the benefits of this very energized conservative base. But now that that base is going to become the face of the Republican Party, they're scared of that.
David, do you agree with that?
Well, is that the same CNN poll that said that Hillary Clinton would win the nomination of the Democratic Party? I mean, my idea is I think a lot of this is still up in the air. And one of the things I've noticed about Governor Huckabee is everybody underestimates him. The Democrats think he has a glass jaw, et cetera, et cetera. I remember a president, I believe he was from California, who everybody underestimated. I think you need to be careful about some of these guys. They'll surprise you. Mike Huckabee is very good in the room. He's very good on his feet. Now, so is Barack Obama. But these are probably the two best rhetorically skilled candidates in the field.
And there's also something that they both have. They're both likable. I want to get our Democrat to respond, because a couple of weeks ago we had another Democrat here, and he thought that Huckabee was probably the most dangerous Republican, not dangerous politically, but maybe would be very tough for the Democrats to run against. Do you agree with that?
I think you got to be careful what you wish for. I think he's a remarkable politician. I think he has – it's not an accident that he's launched himself into the place that he is today. I think he has less to criticize. I think he's more slippery from the standpoint of being able to peg him down and be able to say what he is or what he isn't. So I'm always leery in partisan races when one side tries to have an outcome on the other side, because sometimes you end up with who you wanted and it ends up being the worst possible candidate. Having said that, I do think John McCain in many ways matches up better to Senator Obama. I think he matches up better to Senator Clinton than maybe some of the other candidates.
But how do you respond? I want to get your response to this, Dan, and that is, which is something that Romney said in his debate. You know, Obama he's already played that card. He's already bested experienced United States senators. John McCain would just be another one for him to swat away.
Well, that's a convenient argument for Romney to make.
Would you have any truth to it?
No, I don't think so. I mean, Obama's already bested. I mean, he won the Iowa caucus, but
right.
He hasn't bested anybody yet. And frankly, in my opinion, I think he's not going to best that
anybody.
The other
U.S. senator.
The other U.S. senator from New York. So I don't think so. But actually, McCain, and this is going back to our conversation with the professor, McCain right now in the national polls, and I think this is buoying his momentum a little bit, shows that he matches up best against either Clinton or Obama in terms of having a little bit of an advantage in the early polls between the two. And I don't put that much stock into it, but I think it's good fodder for him to use to promote his electability in the general election against either one of the potential Democrats.
Does Rudy Giuliani's tax plan announced last week, which has been praised by the Club for Growth already, is that the issue that could propel Rudy back into a serious contention for the race?
It helps, but he's got to draw a contrast. Here's the problem that Rudy has, I think, in addition to just seeing this all play out before his eyes and you know, hoping Florida comes tomorrow, is that on the issue that he's strongest on and the issue that he identifies, the new, really, Republican frontrunner is better at it than he is. Right. McCain is better at 9/11, better at the war on terror. You saw that in the South Carolina debate where Giuliani made the point of kind of getting into it and say, wait a second, you know, Senator McCain, you weren't the only one for the surge. I was for the surge.
Right.
The president asked me to speak about it the night that it was announced. I did, so on and so forth, because he sees that national security issue slipping away. Now, his tax plan issue is an opportunity to contrast himself again with McCain as somebody who didn't vote to make the Bush tax cuts permanent. Now you have somebody who's good on war on terror, being Rudy making the argument, and also is more of a supply-side economics guy to try and appeal to that conservative base.
David, bottom line, Republicans tend to like to reward the old war horses.
Yeah.
Does that give an edge to McCain on Election Day?
I think it would normally, and South Carolina is an establishment state. The problem is this guy carries a lot of negatives with him, and he carries a lot of baggage in South Carolina with him. And I think that's what he has to overcome. I saw him on campus a few weeks ago. He's just not exciting like he was in 2000. He looks older, he looks tireder, and he gives the same sort of punchlines. And I'm just wondering if he can really light up a crowd, because there are people out there who can.
He did seem almost comatose on election night in New Hampshire. That
speech the fact when you have to read your victory speech, it doesn't augur well, I think, for a long-term campaign. David, listen, I thank you very much for joining us tonight. David Woodard is a professor of political science at Clemson University in South Carolina. And again, right now, give me a 10-second answer. Who is the likely winner in the Republican primary?
Huckabee.
And in the Democratic primary a couple of weeks later?
Obama
and Huckabee. That's the prediction from South Carolina. We're going to be back with our guests around the studio in Chicago for another full hour of Beyond the Beltway. I'm Bruce Dumont. Keep the cards and letters coming. Keep the phone lines coming at 1-800-723-8229. We're going to take lots of calls in the next hour. We'll also reach north to the great state of Michigan and find out what is likely to happen there. in the Republican primary coming up next Tuesday. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago.
Congratulations, you're a winner. That's right. Drivers all over America can save hundreds of dollars on their car insurance just by switching to State Farm. In fact, we offer more discounts to more drivers than any other insurance company. Got a good driving record? Own more than one car? How about a good student in the family? You may even be eligible for a discount for insuring both your home and car with State Farm. We have so many ways to save, you can't lose. And not only will you get a great price, but you'll also get the Good Neighbor service that has made us America's number one insurance company. State Farm insures more than 40 million drivers, so stop gambling with other insurance companies and switch to State Farm today. Just call your local agent or visit us online at statefarm.com and start saving big today.
Like a good neighbor.
When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
Outside the soon-to-be-completed Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Psst. Hey, you.
Who, me?
Yeah. What are you looking at?
I'm looking at a beautiful new building.
Get it right. You're looking at me. I'm the beautiful new Museum of Broadcast Communications.
A talking building?
No, a talking horse.
Hello.
Yes, I'm a talking building. I communicate. And I need some money.
I don't know if I have any spare change on me.
I get it. Here, look inside this door.
Here's Johnny.
Wow.
You think that's something? Look at this.
Bozo Circus is on the air.
Boy, that's something.
You see, weren't those shows important to you?
Sure.
Well, if you donate just a couple of shekels, I could open my doors to show you the entire history of broadcasting.
Everything?
I'm brand spanking new kid, but I'm a few bricks shy of a full house, so I need you to donate. I need your help.
You need help? I'm talking to a building.
The brand new Museum of Broadcast Communications needs your help. Go to museum.tv and help bring the history of broadcasting to life.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont. We continue with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics. Tonight featuring commentary by our Republican Dan Proft, our Democrat Eric Edelstein, Georgia Logothetis of the Daily Kos, and in this hour we're going to hear from Rick Albin, political reporter for WOOD Radio and Television in Grand Rapids, Michigan, talking about the Republican primary coming up this Tuesday. This past week, of course, Hillary Clinton won the New Hampshire primary, but a lot of the political movement that followed, insofar as endorsements are concerned, John Kerry endorsed Barack Obama, as did Ben Nelson, the conservative Democrat from Nebraska, Janet Napolitano, the very popular governor of Arkansas, of Arizona, and Claire McCaskill, the senator from Missouri, also jumped on the Barack Obama bandwagon, as well as picking up the culinary union workers, very important in the upcoming caucuses in Nevada. you've worked in tons of campaigns, Eric Edelstein. How important are any of these endorsements? I was making the comment during the break that it's good to get an endorsement after you lose an election, and he had a pretty good week.
He had a great week. I mean, how important they are, we'll see. Those are February 5th states, Missouri and Arizona, two huge important states on February 5th, where I think it was perceived possibly that Senator Clinton had an advantage. To have major female statewide office holders in Senator McCaskill and Governor Napolitano support Obama, I do think endorsements, you're always trying to pick off endorsements that play into your opponent's base. So to have major female endorsements in the same way that Senator Clinton having major African-American endorsements, you're trying to sort of cut into that. How determined they'll be, I don't know. I do think it's remarkable that he got those this week. I will say the Kerry thing seemed odd to me, Senator Kerry, in that And maybe this was a little bit of thinking ahead that they had New Hampshire in the bag, because here's a guy from a neighboring state, was the Democratic nominee, who really wrapped up the nomination in New Hampshire last time, and they rolled out his endorsement a day or two after New Hampshire. You got to believe that would have been worth a few thousand votes. So whether that's going to help down the road, I guess, remains to be seen.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I mean, I think these endorsements, I think very few people have coattails in terms of their endorsement actually translating into significant votes, especially with the scrutiny and the high profile, how high profile this race is and these two candidates are. People are going to make their judgments and their decisions at the voting booth based on Hillary Clinton and based on Barack Obama, not based on other politicians who've endorsed one or the other. The other thing that's kind of ironic, though, too, is to being the anti-Washington change candidate, to start getting establishment endorsements also starts to raise a question about just how much of a change agent is this guy really, if he's got, you know, half the crew in Washington also endorsing him. And
John Edwards said that he was going to stick in this race all the way to the convention.
All the way to the convention. It didn't surprise me, because he's invested so much in this campaign. Besides the monetary value that he's put in personally, he's invested so much in his campaign. And I do think large part of his decision to remain in the campaign comes from his wife. She didn't want him to drop out when it was announced that, you know, she had the cancer, and I don't think she wants him to drop out now. I think she wants him to keep the issues of poverty and health care in the forefront in the debate.
She doesn't want him home.
She doesn't want him home. She wants him out of the house.
On the trail.
Jay in Burlington, Iowa, listening to us on KBUR. Nice to hear from the Hawkeyes tonight. Go ahead.
Yeah, last hour was fascinating. Before I comment on the Meet the Press today, I want to comment on the media, because I do think they did an excellent job here in the newspaper, the radio, even the TV. But here's where I really have a big problem. Their commentary is nice, and it's nice to hear. But when I want to hear what comes out of their mouth, unedited. And in this case, with the whole sympathy moment and all such, I feel so in line with the lady that asked the question. Because when I first heard it, you know, that afternoon, I said, I got to get home and hear this and see it, you know. Okay, I did feel empathy for her, even though I'm not, you know, a supporter of hers.
Yeah.
But then when we get, like, Tim Russert couldn't be the better, too. He asked the right questions at the right time. Like he said today, exactly what I was thinking. The lady decided what she saw you unedited when you went into attack mode. Some of us are right, some of us are wrong. Some of us are ready. That's turned. She went into the total robo. In fact, I heard commentators say she showed how she wasn't a robo candidate, but right in the same breath, she was a robo candidate.
Yep.
And I agree. You know, and I'm so angry that the way the media, they did dump on her. They did do all this stuff in the debate.
How do you personally feel about Chris Matthews pinching her cheek?
It was just,
how does a reporter pinch the cheek of a female candidate?
She was cheesy.
It's the 21st century.
They both had a cheese fest. I was disgusted. The Velveeta was flying. But anyway, what I was going to say about today with Meet the Press, I'll tell you, I'm a very diehard Democrat. We did ask her tough questions, all of them, before what major ones, you know, Richardson included.
Yeah.
Everybody asked them tough questions here over and over. And she stopped taking questions a long time ago here. And then she had the nerve to say New Hampshire took, but the most appalling thing over and over, she was like Richard Nixon, and she's never going to be as wicked and evil as Richard Nixon, but the shady, lawyerly way, like Jonathan Alter, I saw him at one of the towns here, he wrote a column. She's a congenital lawyer. She was so. She talked about how
as a lawyer,
Obama
I take offense to that.
She said how Obama twisted
her, by the way, YouTube was the one that pushed this, not Obama. The YouTube phenomenon has pushed this all over these places all over the world. Hear exactly what comes out of their mouth. But what I was going to say was, she twisted everything he said about Iraq. And then Tim Russert even said, he goes, if you get to the statement, he said, from my vantage point, the case was not made. But see, her and Bill edit that, just like Karl Rove would. And I couldn't believe over and over.
Her point, which was the point that Bill Clinton made, was that he is touting the speech that he made when he was a Illinois state senator running for the United States Senate when he opposed the war. But then when he became a United States senator, he had a little lockjaw. He wasn't very vociferous.
You have to support the troops. And the other thing is,
You don't have to do it.
They take the swamp.
Not when the predicate of that entire campaign, which is her point, is he wants to talk about one speech. Her point is there were several other opportunities she could have stepped up.
I think there's a certain irony, too, because I think in many ways Senator Obama went to the Senate, not unlike Senator Clinton when she was elected, this national star, in effect, and I think was following her lead in keep your head down, do the hard work, don't go out and give a bunch of press conferences, don't try to be a show horse, mm-hmm. You know, try to really earn the respect of your peers. Now, that doesn't say, you don't go out on a principal position and say it, but I think in many ways, the Senate is a place where you don't really ruffle a lot of feathers, and so whether that's a fair attack or not, I don't know,
two things. One is, just in terms of Hillary Nixon, Hillary is the cross-section of Hobbes and Machiavelli, so do not underestimate how evil that she could be. But,
wow.
But
I don't even know what that means. It sounds bad.
But secondly, she's exactly right. Actually, Hillary Clinton would be a much better political operative than she is a political candidate, because she's exactly right about how she crystallized Obama being all over the map on the war in Iraq, from his 2002 speech to present to just a debate a few weeks ago, where he wouldn't commit to having all the troops out by the end of his first term, which is 2013, were he president, despite introducing legislation to have all the troops out by March of 2009.
Well,
he's all over the place.
I think the caller brings up, just to touch on two issues. First of all, an excellent point about how the media has edited candidate statements.
And give the second one when we come back. 1-800-723-8029. Lots of calls when we come back from Chicago.
This is nice.
Go ahead. Take a deep breath. Yeah, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Of course you do. Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system, your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department. We're talking high performance.
Wow, I'll take it.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
From Bakersfield, California to Knoxville, Tennessee, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Let's go to Sam, listening to us in Chicago on WLS. Go ahead.
How are you, Bruce?
Fine, how are you?
Good. Hang on one second. Sorry, Bruce.
That's all right.
And take off the speakerphone.
That's okay.
Bruce, you know what I don't understand about this whole situation with the whole campaign is, why am I supposed to be, like, enthralled that this is a fairy tale? I don't want to... This is not about a fairy tale. I think that what we learned after the attack on 9/11 is that we want somebody competent who's paying attention to run this country. And I consider myself a Democrat, but I look at both of the candidates and I say to myself, what kind of experience do either of these candidates have? And I look around and I think that the candidate, if he's nominated, that I'm going to vote for is John McCain. And I look at Obama and, you know, I think this gentleman is so liberal compared to my views that I can't vote for him under any circumstances. And I'm not going to vote for him because he's black. You know, do you understand what I mean by that?
Yeah, but I think you're I'm trying to have a hard time following you. What is it that you think is a fairy tale?
Well, the whole idea that a black man is running and that this is something that it's bridging racial barriers, all of that stuff.
Oh, I see. I don't think that's what Bill Clinton meant when he said that it's a fairy tale.
That's what he really meant.
No, I think
what he really meant. And
I don't know about that.
Well,
I think it may be his speechifying, it may be his rhetoric, it may be rhetoric without the specificity of issues that are upset.
There.
What I'm saying is, I think that's what Bill Clinton.
Well, and I think it was
meant.
His frustration in his mind that the press was. Not giving Gaga. Him his
they
heart
were Gaga.
Time. Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
so. For sure, it was about more than just Obama's position on
yes.
Iraq.
Yeah.
I think that was about the larger Obama.
It's been.
Yeah. Listen. You know. Thanks very much. Let's go to Macon, Georgia, where Jason is listening to us on XM Radio tonight. Go ahead, Jason. Nice to hear
How's
from
everyone
you.
Doing?
We're doing fine. And yourself? How are things in Macon?
They're great. We've had a bit of an Indian summer down here, but I think cold weather's back. And you know, cold for Middle Georgia is 55 is a
right.
high. So.
Well, it's a little colder in Chicago.
What time should we be over?
Yeah.
Come on down. I've got a quick question about John Edwards. I am an Edwards fan, and I'm sort of a new Democrat, I guess you could say, but I've been following politics since the first election I was able to vote in, which was in 1996 when Dole ran against Clinton. And I've since relocated. I grew up in West Virginia, now live in Georgia, and I'm a fan of John Edwards, and I look at his campaign and look at where he needs to do well, which, of course, is the South, South Carolina and Georgia, to parlay that success to other places. And the latest poll for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution came out today, and Obama and Clinton have double what he has. And, of course, in South Carolina, I think the numbers are worse than that. And what is the explanation behind, the lack of support he's getting, even in his stronghold of South Carolina,
Let's let Georgia respond, because 4 years ago he won in South Carolina.
That's right, he did.
I think it's a very basic explanation, is that people don't want to vote for a loser. And right now, the media has already cast John Edwards aside as a loser. They don't even poll him that much anymore.
I believe the voters have.
Well, actually, if
I believe the voters cast him as a loser.
Well, we've only had two primaries thus. Well, a primary and a caucus. And in Iowa, he came in second place using half the money that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton had, and much less media coverage. And that actually wasn't spun as a victory for the Edwards camp, even though it should have been.
No. He spent 8 months down there pretending that he wasn't a trial lawyer, but that he was really a family farmer at heart. And his entire campaign was predicated on winning Iowa. And he set those expectations, just as Romney did.
Jason,
so losing Iowa was there was no way that second place was a victory for Edwards in Iowa.
Jason, answer your own question. What do you think the answer is?
Well, exactly that. I guess I wanted to have experts that know more about it than I to sort of verify that, but you know, you've got two very high-profile candidates that have been high-profile since they, and even before they came into office in Clinton's case,
that siphoned all of the money, siphoned all of the superdelegates, all of the supporters, and has left Edwards as being, you know, fighting for the little guy that can't give him the money, I guess you could say. Well, so.
And now I think the question becomes, it's a fascinating one, is who does Edwards hurt if he maintains even, as you said, Jason, half of the support or even less of the two front runners? Who is he taking it away from? If this is perceived, typically it's perceived as there's a front runner and then everyone below that is cutting into the anti-front runner vote. I'm not sure you can make an argument, you could make an argument on both sides that it hurts Obama or it hurts Clinton. And I think it's an open question.
And I think to answer Jason's question too, I think the reason that Edwards is so far behind, there was an opportunity and a slot to fill for somebody to be the anti-Hillary candidate. Obama filled it. That's the race on the Democratic side. I mean, Obama just got there better, got there first, and he's got a better story, and he's got more infrastructural support.
Jason, the historic nature of Hillary Clinton being the first woman president, or Barack Obama being the first African American president. What do your friends and neighbors, do they talk about that at all? Let's talk about the gender and the race of the candidates. How important is that to people that you run into on the street in Macon, Georgia?
Well, it's very important, and it's very interesting. You know, some old habits die hard, and it being the Deep South, I don't know that either of those two candidates will do very well in the South. And, of course, you know, the road to the White House, everyone says, goes through the South. And, of course, the South has been skewed Republican for Bush, you know, both both in 2000 and 2004. But I can tell you that if it were John Edwards, he has a chance of winning Georgia in a general election. But if it is Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, which it looks to be, especially against the Mike Huckabee, I just can't see Huckabee winning the Republican nomination. But against the McCain, McCain will get 58% to 60% of the vote, I think.
Okay, listen, thanks very much for your call. Let's go to Bonnie listening to us on the north side of Chicago on WLS. Go ahead, you're on the air, Bonnie. Go ahead.
My call. I'm sort of want to address something that Georgia had said earlier in the show about how Hillary is tends to rewrite history. And I would remind her that if she supported Bill Clinton, please remember that he got his political start from the Dixiecrats in the South. And these are the same folks who created the apartheid system there, you know, that lynched people who wanted to exercise their right to vote. And this is the
I don't think that's true.
He came from that political system along with.
Well, he came from the South, but I don't think anything in his background would indicate that he came out of that wing of the Democratic Party. He came out of a more progressive wing, William Fulbright. Mm-hmm. In the state of Arkansas. That's my memory
Fulbright
of where Bill Clinton.
Fulbright was not a progressive person. I mean, compared to the lynch mob, he was. But
he worked for McGovern too.
He was not as progressive. He was progressive as a Southern politician, but not as progressive as a Northern politician.
That's a good description.
Yeah, and the same thing
with Albert Gore Sr.
Right, that's the other one I was going to mention. And so, you know, it's kind of, I think, patronizing, you know, when certain people say, well, you know, I support, you know, certain groups of people, and there's a history back there that doesn't necessarily verify that. And then when Georgia had also said something about, and I guess it was sort of that the voters are kind of behind the eight ball with, you know, keeping up on things. The part I guess I don't understand that maybe all of you could comment on is when you really talk about a president, we talk about issues and what they feel and what they believe and what they want to do. I mean, doesn't it really get to how well you know your Constitution and what presidents really are allowed to do and what they can do? I mean, they don't really make, they can't become president and say, okay, I'm going to end the war, or okay, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to have health care. They don't make those decisions. The best they can do is maybe get the Congress, by a lot of negotiating and giving and taking, to maybe do something that they would like done. But at the end of the day, they don't really have the authority to do all these things that they want to say.
Let's let Georgia respond. Georgia?
Thank you.
Well, I do think that the candidates do take into that voters should take into account, you know, the knowledge that the candidates have, and I think most central their position on the issues. But, you know, the scope of executive power and how the executive will play out under a Democratic administration is something that voters should consider when going into the voting booth. Barack Obama was a constitutional law professor. He obviously knows the Constitution inside and out. That's not to say that the other candidates don't. But I think that what's very important here is judgment. I think that that's going to be the key thing. We talk about change and experience, but I think the issue of judgment, which candidate has the better judgment and which candidate will use that executive power in the proper manner, I think that's going to be the key issue that voters will consider going into the voting booth.
Georgia, can I ask you one more fast question?
Very, very quick one.
Okay. When you talk about that, I mean, isn't a lot of it have to do with what kind of advisors you pick and how well you listen to them?
That is, I think, a central issue. And I'll tell you, I think that's, I know a lot of people are turned off of Hillary Clinton's campaign. They think as a candidate, she's wonderful, but she surrounds herself with a class of advisors that people don't agree with their policy positions or their business types of positions. So I think, yes, and we've seen that with the George Bush administration as well, where it's who you surround yourself with that defines your administration.
We've got to pause. 1-800-723-8029. When we come back, Inside Michigan Politics.
Outside the soon-to-be-completed Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Psst. Hey, you.
Who, me?
Yeah. What are you looking at?
I'm looking at a beautiful new building.
Get it right. You're looking at me. I'm the beautiful new Museum of Broadcast Communications.
A talking building?
No, a talking horse.
Hello.
Yes, I'm a talking building. I communicate. And I need some money.
I don't know if I have any spare change on me.
I get it. Here, look inside this door.
Here's Johnny.
Wow.
You think that's something? Look at this.
Bozo Circus is on the air.
Boy, that's something.
You see, weren't those shows important to you?
Sure.
Well, if you donate just a couple of shekels, I could open my doors to show you the entire history of broadcasting.
Everything?
I'm brand spanking new, kid, but I'm a few bricks shy of a full house, so I need you to donate. I need your help.
You need help? I'm talking to a building.
The brand new Museum of Broadcast Communications needs your help. Go to museum.tv and help bring the history of broadcasting to life.
From Detroit to Grand Rapids, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Our card-carrying conservative around the table this evening is the ever-popular Dan Proft. He is a commentator with Don Wade in the morning on WLS Radio, our flagship station. Georgia Logothetis also joins us. She is one of the leading bloggers in the country. She is a left-wing blogger. Left-wing, left of center, liberal and proud of it. The Daily Kos is where you can find her. And Eric Edelstein joins us. He is one of the country's leading Democratic, progressive, political media consultants. And what campaigns are you working on around the country at the moment? Can you share any?
Doing a lot of congressional races around the country for Democrats. We're doing some statewide races. I should say, for full disclosure, been neutral in the presidential race, but my partner has done a lot of work for Emily's List, and our firm has done some independent expenditures on her behalf. But I think it's exciting to have both these candidates. I think either would make a tremendous nominee, and I'm excited about the way the year is shaping up for all Democrats.
Very good. Well, thank you very much for joining us. It's been a while since you've been on the show. Also joining us right now from his palatial home in Grand Rapids, Michigan, is Rick Albin. He is a political reporter for WOOD Radio and Television, one of the leading broadcast operations in the United States. Rick, nice to have you with us.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Let us begin by talking about what is happening according to the Detroit Free Press. Let's talk about the Michigan primary insofar as the Democrats are concerned. Hillary Clinton is going to be all alone on that ballot, and Uncommitted is running in second place. She's got 56% of the vote, according to today's Detroit Free Press. Uncommitted is 30%. Dennis Kucinich is hanging around with 2%. Tell us briefly, in 1,000 words or less, what happened to the Democrats, and why is that primary so screwed up this year?
Well, it was really about politics. It was pressure that was being put on by Obama and Edwards at a time when they were trying to do something to get some traction with Hillary Clinton. Go back to October, when Clinton looked like she had a pretty sizable lead in most places. And it was on the very day that the Republican presidential candidates came to Dearborn to have a debate that Edwards and Obama and Richardson and Biden decided that they would withdraw from the Democrat primary. That was the final day they could do it. And it was really a matter so they could go back to Iowa and say, look, Hillary Clinton's violating the national party rules. She's going to contend in Michigan. You don't want her to do that if you're from Iowa. You don't want her to do that if you're from New Hampshire. I don't think it had much of a practical effect, but I do think as they turned the corner in New Hampshire and headed towards Michigan, I think Barack Obama and maybe even John Edwards would have liked to have been on this ballot on Tuesday.
What will it mean if somebody goes and votes for her on Tuesday or votes uncommitted?
If they vote for uncommitted and uncommitted gets more than 15%, then those delegates will be allocated proportionately. So when they go to their congressional caucuses in March, there'll be a slate of delegates elected for Hillary Clinton and then a slate that will be uncommitted. They won't have to vote for any particular person. They could vote for Edwards. They could vote for Obama. They could vote for Clinton. They could vote for whomever. But remember, as of we're sitting here tonight in my not-so-palatial house, as we're sitting here tonight, the National Democratic Party contends that they will not seat Michigan's delegates to the National Convention. Just this last week, they took away their hotel rooms, and they said that they will not seat them. Now, I have no insight, and you know, nobody whispers to me from the National Democrats. I think it's highly unlikely that we go through this whole process and the Democrats don't let the delegates come. They haven't lost this state since 1988, and I don't think they want to anger the Democrats in the state going into the general election.
Eric Edelstein's got a comment.
Yeah, no, I agree with Rick. I think it would be remarkable, given that Michigan and Florida are battleground states for Democrats, that they are going to punish somehow next summer the Democratic establishment in those two places. It's just, I can't imagine that happens.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, and I think the fallout, while it might not be that great, I just don't think you want to take the chance in an election that is probably going to shape up, I would guess, to be a relatively close election, even though that there are some different attitudes out there. I think this is going to be a pretty tough fought election, depending on who the nominees are.
Let us talk about what is happening in the Republican primary, because that's where the energy is and all the national focus before they head to the polls on Tuesday. According to the Detroit Free Press poll at the moment, Romney is in first place with 27%. His father was the three-term governor, ran for president of the United States 40 years ago. And John McCain has now moved up into second place with 22%, and Mike Huckabee at 16%. Before I ask you about the specifics of the poll, what in the wake of New Hampshire, what's the track record of the Detroit Free Press and their success in predicting what might happen in Michigan?
Well, let me just say that we actually have our own poll that we rely on, that we work with another newspaper.
Okay.
But the numbers are very close. I think ours is 27, actually has McCain up by one, 26 for Romney, 19 for Huckabee. And I think that anytime you poll in a narrowly divided electorate, I think it becomes difficult. They certainly had some trouble in New Hampshire. But if you look at those two polls and say it looks like a pretty dead heat between Romney and McCain, that sounds right. My political instinct says that probably is about right. But you can't forget that Mike Huckabee, with his populist message, didn't get into the state in any significant way until Friday, and started working the state on Friday and Saturday, left, went to South Carolina, came back into the state, will be here tomorrow. And so if you see those Huckabee numbers come up at the end of the day, I wouldn't be terribly surprised, because the other two have had pretty good organizations and presence here, while Huckabee has not. They are all three running television ads, and the Club for Growth is actually running an anti-Huckabee ad here in the state.
My recollection, Rick, historically, is that when Pat Robertson ran for president, the religious right did very well in that state, and the Right to Life movement is very well organized there. Is the strength of that vote still real strong, and is that the core of Huckabee's strength at this moment?
I think so, but I guess I would answer that yes, but you also have a state that in 2000, with independents and Democrats crossing over, elected John McCain. John McCain gets some of that vote, too, just because he approaches some issues that will attract some of those people. It appears that Governor Romney has had some problem getting traction with those people, but he's still polling well. Yes, I think that vote is out there, but the real question for me on Tuesday is just how engaged people are. I think in Iowa, Democrats turned out 2-1 more than Republicans. Here in Michigan, Democrats have, unless they're a huge Hillary Clinton supporter, are really, really excited about the fact that they might be able to help Obama or Edwards by being uncommitted, which I think is a stretch to get somebody motivated with no commercials, no candidates, no rallies, but you're going to get people to turn out and vote for nobody. I find that odd. So my question is, how many Democrats end up voting in the Republican primary? Because it's completely open. We don't register by party here. You just walk up, you ask for the ballot. I think that may have an impact on this race that is not pullable, if you will.
George talked with us during one of the breaks about the conspiracy amongst the left. You're meddling. You want to meddle in Michigan.
We're not meddling. We're merely.
Well, what would you call it? Mischief.
Encouraging voters to exercise their voting right. And
why?
What our website has done, and I know a lot of other websites have also jumped on board, is encouraging Democrats, since obviously if they're not Hillary Clinton supporters, to vote in the Republican primary in Michigan and vote for Mitt Romney. And the logic behind that being, as long as Romney stays in the race and it's a three-person race, that just means more money being poured into ads, more attacks on Republican versus Republican. And any time you have money coming out of Republican pockets for attack ads against Republicans, it's good for Democrats. So when Romney wins, Democrats win.
Rick, I'm shocked by that strategy. What's your thought on that?
I'm not.
Mischief.
But, there's one other interesting thing, and pardon me for a minute, I'm going to move out of Michigan for a second.
All right.
Because as we look at it today and we look at the polls, it does look like a three-way race. And I had a big argument on a television show I taped earlier this week with a bunch of my colleagues, a friendly argument. But I'm not sure that you can count Rudy Giuliani out of this yet, because Giuliani has owned Florida for the past week. Now, his numbers in the polls I saw this morning didn't look as strong as you would have thought they would. But I don't think it's beyond comprehension that you could go into Super Tuesday having four Republicans that have won a primary or a caucus somewhere. So this could be even more than a three-person.
That would be beautiful.
I hear that would be music to your ears.
To what extent do the coattails of Romney's father, again, a three-term governor, and also his mother ran for the U.S. Senate there once, I believe.
That's right.
How many people in Michigan still remember that name? That was 40 years ago.
Yeah, you got to be pretty old and be voting and be remembering that. We were joking about that, that the only people that remembered George Romney were those of us that were sitting around the table, and quite frankly, I wasn't old enough to vote for George Romney. But the Romney name is well respected here, and it does have some impact, at least from a name ID, and he has worked hard here. He has cut some commercials, some television commercials, that are very Michigan-specific, that reference his father, reference what has gone on in Michigan, the bad economy that I don't have to tell you guys about, that the single state recession. So he has been very Michigan-specific in his messaging here. I'm anxious to see what that will do. I don't know if there is a big pull. It doesn't hurt. I think the Romney name serves him well, but I don't know if there are any coattails to go along with that. And he's getting a lot of competition, as you could well imagine.
What about some of the political leadership in the state? Although most people know, I mean, you have a Democratic governor and two United States senators that are Democrats. What about some of the other Republican members of Congress?
There are a number of members of Congress that are on with the Romney team. There are some others, at least one I can think of, that is with Giuliani. I'm not sure about Senator McCain. He has a lot of local politicians involved with him. He has National Committee Man, I think, is and National Committee Woman are both working on his campaign. So the establishment politicians have kind of fanned out between those two camps. And some of the local state representatives were endorsing Mike Huckabee yesterday. So, I mean, there seems to be enough support to go around, at least from the establishment.
Rick Albin is our guest. He's a political reporter for WOOD Radio. That's our affiliate in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Also works for the television stations. Got his hand on what's happening in the great state of Michigan. We're going to take more calls at 1-800-723-8029 when we roll on from Chicago.
Mmm, this is nice.
Go ahead, take a deep breath.
Mmm.
Yeah, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Of course you do. Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system, your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department. We're talking high performance.
Wow, I'll take it.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
We'll be right back. From Phoenix, Arizona to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Let's go to Pittsburgh. Michael is listening to us tonight on WLS. Got a question about Michigan. Go ahead, Michael. You're on the air.
How you doing? And you're coming in pretty clear tonight, too.
Terrific. Glad to hear it.
Yeah. I'm a registered independent here in Pennsylvania. And my first part of my question was whether or not, is Michigan actually an open primary?
It is.
Yes.
And that means that what, that is it in a sense it's like New Hampshire?
It is like New Hampshire, except that I think the difference, maybe Rick can tell me, in New Hampshire, you can't be a part. If you're party registered, you couldn't vote in the other candidate's primary. If you were an independent, you could.
Yeah.
The difference in Michigan is there's no party registration, so you go in and request a ballot.
That's right, and that's also one of the issues that has arisen. You ask what went wrong with this primary. Some people are not so happy about the fact that when you go in, you're going to have to ask for a Republican or a Democratic ballot. And forget about the fact that there are third parties that are not happy that they're not involved at all. There are other people that aren't happy that the state is picking up the $12 million tab for what is essentially a party function. But there are people that don't want their name on that list because they will keep a list and they will get back to the parties. And so that's a real switch here in Michigan, and that could affect turnout. That's one of the things the Secretary of State here isn't even guessing about turnout because there's so many variables. But no, in Michigan you can... In this particular case, and this is the first time we've ever done this, you can vote on either side.
So hypothetically speaking, then, someone like McCain, for example, he's trying to bring in independents, I guess, or people that are Democrats that don't necessarily want to vote for, what, Hillary?
Absolutely. And that's they believe that was a large part of their strength in 2000 when they beat George Bush here. Governor John Engler at the time said that a big Bush supporter said he would build a firewall in Michigan.
Right.
And after the win in South Carolina for George W. Bush, they came into Michigan with their hopes up high. A lot of Democrats, a lot of independents switched over. Some people think even some of that might have been 8 years ago, might have been Democrats doing some a little bit of mischief, and it may have just been that was the person they wanted to pick.
Rick, dissect the state for us, if you will. Is most of the Republican vote in the western part of the state?
Well, there's a good deal of it, but it isn't as evenly split as I think it once was and people think about it. If you look at Macomb County and Oakland County on the eastern side of the state, there are certainly Republican votes to be had over there. Two members of Congress that are Republicans from over there. If you come one step further, one congressional seat to the west, you have another Republican that's in that seat, yet another congressional district to the west, another Republican. You have a big concentration of Democrats around the Detroit area as far as congressional representation. But it is relatively well spread out, and by the way, there are any number of Democratic votes to be had on the west side of the state. In fact, Barack Obama, while he hasn't campaigned here, came and did a fundraiser in East Grand Rapids. So,
is the economy the key issue for voters in the Republican primary?
The economy is becoming the key issue. I mean, I think overall the economy is becoming the key issue, but I still think that you have some overtones of war. I think George W. Bush is an issue. I think some of the typical political things, but it is the issue that the candidates have hammered time and time again about Michigan's economy, about a single state recession, about what they would do about it. How do you save the auto industry? What do you do to provide new jobs? We have heard it time and time again. In fact, very often, and this is part of the reason they wanted this primary early, these guys and women that come into the state, and Hillary Clinton has been here earlier on, they sound more like they're running for governor of Michigan than president. I mean, they have a very Michigan centered message. They do talk about national security and defense, but it is all about Michigan's economy because, as you know, you may have seen that on Friday we have a revenue estimating conference which looks forward to see how much money the state's going to be taking in. They look at the economic forecast, and they're forecasting 8% unemployment in the state before the end of the year.
Earlier in the broadcast, David Woodard from the Clemson was with us. He said that in South Carolina, illegal immigration was the albatross around the neck of John McCain. How does that issue play in Michigan, and would you make a similar comment about that as a problem for McCain in Michigan?
Surprisingly, I don't think that issue has gotten nearly as much attention as I would have expected it to. Now, Mike Huckabee had the Minutemen in for him early in the week, and he certainly has been pushing immigration, but I haven't seen a big outpouring of... I really expected people to turn up at some of these McCain events and maybe stir it up a little bit, because obviously there'd be a lot of people in the Republican Party that are not happy with John McCain's stance on immigration, but I haven't seen that come to play. Looking at the tabs from the poll, and I must tell you that I didn't have all of them yesterday, because the poll just came out of the field at 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon, but it did not show up as a major issue there, unless it does, you know, after further examination of those. So I don't think it's going to be the deciding factor, but it will certainly be a factor for some voters.
Let's go to Mike in Spokane, Washington, listening to us on KXLY, a former Michigander.
That's right, Bruce. You've got a good memory, Pontiac, Michigan, so a lot of good roots there. But, you know, it's originally Michigan is known as a strong right-to-life state, rejecting legalized abortion before the Supreme Court's infamous decision. How is Fred Thompson doing in Michigan?
He's not here.
He's not there.
He came to Mackinac Island during the big Republican conference earlier in the year. It was kind of his first foray into the presidential circles, if you will. He was mobbed by reporters. I mean, I've done this for 30 years. I've never seen so many people try to get around this guy. Later, we went in, sat down, had a brief interview with him. And to my knowledge, he hasn't been back.
Did anybody fall asleep during that discussion?
Actually, you know, as you sat down and talked with him, like so many candidates, in a smaller environment, he really was. He was interesting enough to talk to, talked about his ideas. The speech he gave on the island was not widely applauded. But he hasn't been back. He hasn't been in Iowa or New Hampshire or, for that matter, in Michigan. And I think he's taken all of his hopes and dreams in South Carolina right now.
Rick Elben, we're out of time. I'm going to go out on the limb. I'm going to predict to Hillary Clinton will win the Democratic primary.
You are brave.
I want you to take 5 seconds, look into your crystal ball. Who's likely to win the Republican primary come Tuesday in Michigan?
It'll be McCain or Romney, and it's a flip of the coin right now.
Okay, that's Rick Elben, political reporter for WOOD, one of America's great radio stations, also works the TV side. Thanks very much for being with us and taking us inside Michigan politics tonight. Our thanks to Dan Proft, who's been our conservative Republican. Dan, thank you very much for being
Bruce.
With us. Congratulations again on your prognostication. pick a winner in Michigan.
McCain.
South Carolina.
McCain.
Pick a couple of winners for us. Go ahead. Republican winners, Michigan.
McCain.
And McCain and McCain?
I think McCain takes Michigan. I'm going to say Huckabee.
McCain and Huckabee. I'm going to go with McCain and Huckabee. Huckabee winning in South Carolina. That's Georgia Logothetes. And also, we thank the ever-popular Eric Edelstein, our Democrat, for being with us tonight. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Congratulations, you're a winner. That's right. Drivers all over America can save hundreds of dollars on their car insurance just by switching to State Farm. In fact, we offer more discounts to more drivers than any other insurance company. Got a good driving record? Own more than one car? How about a good student in the family? You may even be eligible for a discount for insuring both your home and car with State Farm. We have so many ways to save, you can't lose. And not only will you get a great price, but you'll also get the good neighbor service that has made us America's number one insurance company. State Farm insures more than 40 million drivers, so stop gambling with other insurance companies and switch to State Farm today. Just call your local agent or visit us online at statefarm.com and start saving big today.
Like a good neighbor.
When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
Outside the soon-to-be-completed Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Psst. Hey, you.
Who, me?
Yeah, what are you looking at?
I'm looking at a beautiful new building.
Get it right. You're looking at me. I'm the beautiful new Museum of Broadcast Communications.
A talking building?
No, a talking horse.
Hello.
Yes, I'm a talking building. I communicate, and I need some money.
I don't know if I have any spare change on me.
I get it. Here, look inside this door.
Here's Johnny.
Wow.
You think that's something? Look at this.
Bozo's Circus is on the air.
Boy, that's something.
You see, weren't those shows important to you?
Sure.
Well, if you donate just a couple of shekels, I could open my doors to show you the entire history of broadcasting.
Everything?
I'm brand spanking new kid, but I'm a few bricks shy of a full house, so I need you to donate. I need your help.
You need help? I'm talking to a building.
The brand new Museum of Broadcast Communications needs your help. Go to museum.tv and help bring the history of broadcasting to life.